Hi, guys. Just a reminder that this podcast, as well as many of my online resources, is delivered freely. If you would like to help me get this message of healing out to millions of people around the world, please consider clicking on the donate button on my website, thecureforchronicpain.com. Thank you. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. What's it called? This is Nicole Sachs, and welcome to the Cure for Chronic Pain podcast, my podcast. I'm so glad you're here. I guess I'm a little flustered doing the intro because I just came off such an incredibly moving, authentic, incredible, I'm struggling to find words for the conversation I just had with Kimberly. It was awesome. Kimberly, you're awesome. I honor you for coming on to this program and really sharing yourself with everyone. And it was such an honor and a pleasure to be with you. So I have a great real-time heal for you. Kimberly wrote to me after she used my work and TMS principles to recover completely from 24-hour-a-day debilitating IC, interstitial cystitis, which many of you know. It's a bladder issue and regarding pelvic pain and a lot of things that people write to me about. She was totally debilitated, completely healed from that, and woke up on the proverbial next morning with dry eye and a very serious case of dry eye, which has been owning her ever since. And she wrote to me for Real Time Heal, and I said, wow, that is an interesting story. Let's get in it. Let's get down to it. I never do have any interaction with my real-time healers before we jump on the air. So I knew nothing about her, and what a beautiful experience to get to know her in that hour. So I'm really looking forward to sharing that with you. A couple of brief housekeeping items. My inner child retreat, the second mini retreat, has unfortunately already sold out. Fortunately for all of us, because it's great work. And I don't know if I'm going to offer another one right away, but I will say that the inner child work is a literal half day of my virtual retreat that I'm having in May, the 21st through the 23rd. So if you're doing this work and you're interested in joining us, that will be a huge part of the weekend-long retreat, which will include all of my Omega instructors coming to share the weekend and just teach all their incredible knowledge. It's going to be amazing. And when you do sign up for the online retreat, you get my Freedom from Chronic Pain course and my four original meditations as part of your retreat fee. So if anyone's on the fence about that, or wanted to do the inner child retreat and got closed out of that, please join us for that weekend. It's going to be so incredible. I'm so looking forward to it. And of course, at this point, a lot of you guys write to me. I'm no longer working one-on-one, but that is the way to work with me. And I am very present and very there and right in it with you all weekend. Okay, all information on my website, thecureforchronicpain.com. Click the resources tab if you have any questions about the work I'm doing. All of my free resources and everything you could possibly need is there. And then also the retreats tab for the retreats, including my in-person retreat, which is confirmed August 1st through the 6th at the Omega Institute in upstate New York. Okay, my loves, it is beyond my pleasure to share with you this real-time heal with me and Kimberly. Enjoy. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Real Time Heal. This is Nicole. And today we have a conversation with Kimberly. As you guys know, I really don't prep for these at all. So I know just a tiny bit about Kimberly from an email she wrote me. But I'm just going to hand it over to Kimberly and let her start out, and we will go from there. So Kimberly, welcome to Real Time Heal.
Oh my gosh, Nicole. Thank you so much. To say I'm honored is not doing justice to how much I appreciate everything you do for all of us.
Thank you. Thank you so much. So thank you for that, by the way, because I oftentimes don't say a deep enough thank you to how much it means to me that people do appreciate the work. So thank you so much for that. And tell me what's up.
Okay. Well, I'll say I'm nearly 65, which means I've got so many years of history. So I'm going to try to be succinct, but I'll just start by saying the reason I reached out to you is I've learned through your work and through reading Dr. Sarno's work, and I'm a big believer in TMS, that I had suffered from interstitial cystitis, which I know you've got too many listeners who can relate to.
Yes.
And I went all in. I did it all. Saw countless urologists, gynecologists, pelvic floor physical therapists. I listened to every podcast. I joined every group. I tried every potion, medicine. It was debilitating. And it was really until I started doing the work and I learned about journal speak that I, and quite frankly, also working with a therapist who was helping me through some past trauma work.
Of course, yeah.
She was using EDMR, if you're familiar with that.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, okay. I was able to completely resolve my IC. And people that know me well almost don't believe that that was possible. But I am, you know it is, and I'm telling your listeners, if you do the work and if you really believe, as you've said a million times, it can happen. So I went from debilitating, where you feel like you have the worst UTI raging all day and all night, to virtually no symptoms. But then, maybe not so surprising, all of a sudden I got this new debilitating condition that is called, it's dry eye syndrome, but it's called MGD, which stands for meibomian gland disease. And I'm not going to bore you with the details of it, other than it's, my God, it's like equally debilitating. And as I'm doing my journal speak around it, as I'm going to my fourth ophthalmologist, you know, expensive eye treatments, ointments at night, drops that sting, steroids, whatever I need to do so that my eyes can have some kind of normalcy to them, I made the connection in my head that maybe some of the trauma work I'm struggling with has to do with not being able to cry. I mean, I have just lost my ability to emote. I don't know how else to describe it. I've just become extremely flat emotionally. And I desperately want to kind of honor my deep sadness and fear and rage and shame and all of that, and be able to just sob and let it out. I feel like it's toxic and it's just stayed in my body. And I thought, it can't be a coincidence that I have dry eye and I'm not able to cry. There's right. like no tears in my eyes. So that's what kind of spurred me to write to you. I haven't had any luck. I just came to this realization fairly recently, but I haven't had any luck getting to the, you know, to the root cause to try and turn this dry eye thing around. But working with my therapist, I'm thinking, I think I'm just too good at repressing. I'm kind of an expert at it, and I would just love your thoughts around it and see if you can help me kind of get to this next stage.
Okay. Well, off the bat, first of all, good work. I mean, my God, we can't just ever gloss over the fact that you had debilitating 24-hour IC, figured out about my work and Dr. Sarno's work, did the work alongside yeah. the therapist. But I do want people to know out there, the work that Kimberly did for herself is the work that anyone can do for themselves. The fact that you have a therapist, which I think, you know, in a perfect world, everybody would be seeing their therapist 3 days a week. You know, I'm such a believer in having a partner, but it's not imperative. It's helpful and it's lovely, but it's not imperative, because in the end, similar to when people say, you know, but what if I die alone? And then the Buddhist says, we all die alone. You know, we all have to do the self-healing work for ourselves, because it's our nervous systems that need to feel safe. You know, nobody else can do that for us. And so, you know, just brava that you did that work and that you were able to find such a transformational resolution to something that was really stopping your life. And do you spend enough time honoring that, do you think?
You know, I didn't, and I haven't until you just said that. And I think that's, I don't celebrate my wins very much. So I made a note as you were saying that, that I need to stop and just be immensely proud of the commitment I made to believe. I mean, that's really, that was the bottom line, because I was grasping at straws. I was literally trying everything. And now I just want to go to the top of a mountain and scream to everybody, you know, you've got to listen to Nicole. You've got to read these books. You've got to, you know, really try it. It is absolutely possible. So I will give more time to just thank myself for the commitment I made to get better.
Yeah, because, you know, I think that as human beings, we all work on a deficit model. So, and this, by the way, is not our fault. It's oftentimes the result of socialization. Funny enough, as we're recording this, this was just my topic for my I Am Evidence video on Instagram today, which is, when we're looking to accept ourselves, one of the biggest barriers is that human socialization in general is a setup, because you're a little baby and you have these sort of animalistic instincts to grab and to want and to scream and to bite and to do all these things that, like, you kind of can't do in life. So even the most well-meaning parents, as they're trying to socialize us, are sending us a message which says, you are bad. You are wrong. You need to be different. The way you're showing up is not okay as it is. And that is an ubiquitous human experience. And so the problem in terms of self-acceptance is that we work from this deficit model, which is, instead of looking at ourselves as these brilliant, shiny beings that should be feeling proud of ourselves, we often skip that step directly, and all we want to do is not feel horrible about ourselves.
Right.
And that's just, so just having some acceptance and some normalization around that, and to realize that so often we fall into that trap where, instead of celebrating our wins, we just are so grateful that we no longer feel like total crap that we just kind of skate over that and what's next, you know? So, but also saying that we must honor that you did something incredibly hard. You did something beautiful for yourself. You're 65. You laid down years and years of medical model socialization and training that, you know, the only way to fix a physical symptom is with a physical solution, that we all are taught. Unless you're like 5 years old and living in my house, most of us have that lesson. You were able to let that go, believe, and do the work you needed to do to heal. And so I just had to mention that off the bat, that is beautiful and brilliant. And I feel tremendous connection to you to say, honor it. So
thank you. I will. I take that to heart.
Good. Okay. So having said that, now that we got that out of the way, my first question for you in terms of emoting is, what is your history of emoting? What was your childhood like? Was it safe to get very emotional, big feelings, whether it be very sad or very excited? And if, you know, let me ask that first, and then I'll have my follow-up question.
Yeah, no, it wasn't safe. And I've thought back, of course, you know, you do your list of traumas, whether they're the big T traumas, like you've said, or the little T traumas. And if I go way back, I think part of my issue is kind of embedded in my cells, which means it's embedded in my nervous system. When I was 6 months old, my parents found out that my older brother was diagnosed with and dying from leukemia. And they were understandably devastated. That was their firstborn child.
Wow.
And I was really significantly neglected. I don't remember that, but my aunt and uncle, who I was extremely close to, came and kind of rescued me. They saw I was neglected, and they took me into their home with four other kids under the age of 8. And I lived with them for 6 months. And then when my parents had lost my brother and they were starting the grieving process, they took me back home. Well, that's really formative time in your life. And I was probably scared to death and confused and ignored. And then I just remember, and I don't have great memories of my childhood. And I know that that's common for people that have had, you know, I've, I had some sexual molestation, et cetera, et cetera. I've heard that it's common to not have really clear memories of your childhood when you've suffered a number of traumas, and I'm in that camp. But I had an alcoholic mother, and my dad was just, you know, classic narcissist and not home very much. And when I would express sadness or fear, I would be yelled at or ignored. And I just remember there was a period of time where I just stopped talking, literally stopped talking for like, I think weeks, if not months.
Wow. And How old were you?
I was probably 7 or 8.
Right. Makes sense. Developmentally, that makes sense.
Oh, does it? Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. They took me to some doctors, and my dad would just stand over me and yell at me to talk.
Oh, that's helpful.
which really helped. Yeah. And it's just because the only power I had was to not talk, you know, right, other than trying to run away. But as I got older, I think I was able to emote halfway decently. I've always been a pretty controlled person. I've got kind of, you know, the classic personality that you've described so well, right? The overachiever, right, perfectionist. I'm really only okay when the people that I love are okay. That's right. My big thing. In the last probably 20 years, I've just gone flat. And I look at people, my very best friend in the whole world cries when she sees a cute bunny rabbit. I mean, she, right, can cry at anything. And I look at her with such envy. And people look at me and think, well, it's not the end of the world that you can't cry. It's painful to cry. But for those of us who can't, it's equally painful. Because I'm a 2-time cancer survivor. I think it's just like taken up residence in my body. And I really want to break through. My aunt that took me in when I was 6 months old, who I really consider a mother to me, passed away about not quite a year ago. I have not shed a tear for this woman. I adored her. And that just tells me I just feel very broken because of it.
Okay. All right. I am getting a lot of good information that I need to help you. So my next question is, you mentioned you had that sort of folding into yourself as a young child for reasons that, you know, in a 1-hour phone call, we're not going to get to all of it. But obviously, let me just say to you, I get it completely why a 6 or 7-year-old would not talk. 6 or 7 is the age that we begin individuation, which means we start to understand that our parents are not us, that we can start to have opinions and thoughts that are independent of them. It starts a little earlier, but 6 to 7 and being a parent of 5 kids, it's the time where you really, it's more than just, I can do it myself, which might be more of a toddler thing. It's more complex thinking about who I am versus who other people are and having that sort of autonomy that starts to build. So it makes a lot of sense for me as a child of that age that you did whatever it was that you could do to have any control over your life, which probably felt so complicated that you couldn't even get a handle on why you didn't have control, because so much of this was prior to even having memory with your brother's illness and his passing. So right, that makes total sense to me. But then you said, but you know, as I got older, I was able to emote rather normally. And then you said about 20 years ago, I went flat. Is there anything you can tell me about, you know, around the 45-year mark that stands out as to why you went flat?
Oh, gosh, yes. Because both my cancers, my breast cancer and melanoma, were like 10, 11 years ago. So that wasn't the time frame. But 18, 19, 20 years ago, I went through as so many people have, I'm not alone, but I went through just a horrific divorce. And it, in my mind, was my biggest failure. And I am not good with failing. That is not something, I do anything I can to avoid it. And I fought for the 10 years we were married. I fought harder than I've ever fought for anything. To keep that going. But it was, I ultimately had to walk away, and it was scary because I had to kind of, you know, serve a restraining order and take my daughter, my only daughter, and make sure we were safe. And it just was very traumatic, actually. So that's the only thing I can think of that happened during that particular time. And, well, I guess one other thing, I've always associated very much my identity with my career. I've had a wonderful career and I'm so proud of it. And I think because I was emotionally unstable at that time because of my pending divorce, I left a very secure, incredible job that I had been with for 20 years. And that is the single biggest regret of my life because it's been a little wild ever since then.
So all right.
Those two things.
Well, this is huge because when you think about it, people will do unconsciously and consciously whatever they need to do to control their situation because we as humans don't feel safe. And I put that in quotes because, of course, control isn't really as real as we think it is, but we don't feel safe unless we are controlling our lives, making sure that we're safe, making sure that everything is set up just so. When you are 6 or 7, that control, the only thing you can do to exert that control was to shut down. It seemed like the only thing. And now we fast forward to 45 or so, where this marriage that you were so intent on making right because you did not want to fail, that had so much to do with how you defined yourself and how you felt good about yourself, starts to fail in obviously a very scary fashion if it required a restraining order. And so what did you do? Again, grasped at this need to control something, and what was the only thing you could do was to shut down. Now, of course, you're a mother, so you can't shut down completely. You can't stop speaking when you have a relationship with a child and you have to parent. Right. What can you do? You shut down your emotions. That's the tool you had. And even though it wasn't conscious, it makes so much sense to me. And I can bring so much love and connection to that woman who did the only thing she could, which is, girl, if you're going to freaking cry about this all day, it's not going to work out for you. So you know what? Rein it in.
Right. Oh my gosh. Why have I never made that connection though? But that really makes sense to me. It's like, I did not have time to wallow. Right. I needed to move to action. Yeah. Yeah.
And I want to tell you personally, I relate to you quite a bit because I was younger when I went through my divorce, but not that much. I was in my, my mid to late thirties. But I know what it's like to be a mother, and you look at these children who are innocents in this life, you know, they didn't ask for their parents to be a certain way or to get divorced, and you feel such an obligation to just make things as right for them as possible. And then, of course, there's the added pressure of looking at your own childhood and saying, well, my parents fucked it up because they weren't able to be there for me the way I needed when my brother was sick. So I damn well am going to be here for this kid. You know, yes. There's so much big energy that happens there. And I really do think, for me personally, that after I went through that exact same feeling, I also left my marriage, that I also think I remember, if I'm remembering myself, because I don't really do it until I'm in the moment with another person where I'm tasked to do so, I think I also shut down my feelings. And the only time I could cry was when I drank, which of course, I don't know if you know this, I'm sober. So that ran out and I had to learn how to relate to myself again. And it looks like that's where you are.
Makes perfect sense. Absolutely. Now I just have to figure out, I mean, this may sound silly, but I've tried like every trick in the book. I've got photographs in front of me of my absolutely incredible dog that I love more than life itself, who passed away. I've got, you know, a photo of my aunt that I adored that I look at. I listen to music that makes me sad. I've asked people what movies are just such tearjerkers that you can't get through it without crying. And I binge watch them. I'm doing everything I can, contrived, right? But everything I can think of to tap into this well. And I'm just so good at stuffing it down. I've gotten so good at it over the years that it's not bubbling up. It's just not. So maybe this realization will help. Maybe the connect the dots you just gave me.
Before we put too much into the crying, which we're going to get to that. How do you have any doubt that this dry eye is TMS? Where are you with belief?
I'm because of the experience I had with my IC, I am 95% certain that it is TMS, that my dry eye is.
Okay. So we need to work with that 5%. And I don't mean to do the deficit model, but, you know, because I'll never forget, like when I was a kid, I would get all A's and a B and my dad would be like, well, we're going to need to sit and discuss the B. So I don't want to do that to you.
Right.
But, you know, I don't want to be that shaming parent, but I would like to discuss that 5%. And the reason I would is because there are many intricate, nuanced factors that affect our ability to get well. And we have to look at all of them. And belief feels like it is something you can decide on. And to some extent it is, but to some extent it has to land sort of in your solar plexus. Like it's got to land so true for you that your nervous system learns to trust you. Because as you know, you sound like you listen to a lot of my stuff, our nervous system it doesn't wait for our opinion and doesn't ask our permission. It protects us if it perceives us in danger. That's it. There's no discussion. Because if there were a discussion, you'd be dead a billion times over. Each of us would be just dead, dead, dead. Because if our nervous system waited for us to think it out and give permission before we jumped off the you know, out of the street onto the curb when the bus was coming by, which is something that happened to me, I'd be dead. I'd be squished. I mean, you know, there was no time to think. That is the beauty of the human brain and nervous system and the way it keeps us alive and the reflex of fight, flight, or freeze. And so that 5% that is sitting there somewhere, we just need to take the darkness and flip on the light. So I guess my first question to you is, where is the doubt? Even though the doubt is so small compared to the beautiful, big, vast plane of belief that you have, you know, based on the IC, where is that 5%? Can you give it a voice?
I think so. And maybe doubt is not the right word. I think I threw myself as I'm like a black and white all in. When I choose to learn something new or tackle something, I just become ridiculously obsessed with it. And I go go the full gamut. And that's what I did with my IC. And I obsessively focused on it. And I spent a lot of time getting to a place of complete belief and doing the work and doing the work and doing the work. And then when I got a respite from it, right, the pain went away. I felt 100% normal. I wasn't fearful that it was going to come back. Then I immediately got hit with this dry eye and it just pissed me off.
Right.
And I thought, what? I'm not even going to get a break for a minute to just like be normal. And I think the resentment I held that it had just moved to somewhere else and now I had to start all over again, I think that's what's hanging me up, because I'm resent every time I realize this now. Every time I go to do my journal speak about my dry eye now, I'm resentful. I even write about that. I'm just resentful. And then I'm fearful that when it resolves, it'll be something else.
Okay.
And
this is great.
It's exhausting.
This is such great stuff. Okay. This is awesome. Okay. Well, the reason this is so awesome is because you and I are no different. Okay, I've been doing this for 20 years. I'm the guru of this stuff, and we are no different. The reason we're no different is we are just human beings, tender, soft, chewy inside, trying to go through this life with all the stimuli and all the challenges and all the feelings and whatever. So, what if I were to say to you that the day the IC resolved and the dry eye popped up and you woke up one morning and rubbed your eyes and said something's wrong, what if I said to you that if in that moment you had the presence of mind to go, ugh, you're funny, you're also boring, I don't care, that within 3 hours, that dry eye would have resolved and it never would have become a thing.
Oh,
Now, don't feel resentful, though, because you don't get to choose your journey. You're on your journey. You don't get to choose your journey. I spent many, many years doing what you did to get to be able to say that to you. But what I want to tell you is that's the way this works. I don't have a cure for human pain, nor do I have a cure for the human condition. I have a cure for chronic pain because chronic pain requires fear and anger for it to continue.
Right.
And so what you are, my love, is perfect because what you are is a person who is on this journey and through this beautiful gift of dry eye, go with it, you are getting the information you need to spend the rest of your life free. Because there's never going to be a time where you don't experience some discomfort in your body. But when you start to learn that everything, that sometimes we feel things in our hearts and sometimes we feel things in our bodies and they're literally interchangeable. So waking up with dry eye on that morning is completely analogous to waking up with a sad, depressed feeling or an irritated feeling or a resentment. You know, but it turned out that instead of feeling those things, you felt it in your eye. And because you're still on this journey and because we all are hopelessly medicalized, you had no choice at that moment to take this ride. You got onto the, you felt the dry eye, you jumped right out of your bed into the roller coaster seat, you strapped on and you said, let's go. And there's no way around that. So the first thing you have to do is completely and utterly, arms open, forgive yourself. Everybody does it. Everybody does it. And there's no way around it. But you now have been given precious information that you understand that will always feel something. But the only reason it perpetuates is because we give it fear, we give it meaning, we get angry about it, and we give it all the fuel the nervous system needs to protect you with it. The nervous system isn't against you. It's not like it felt your fear and it said, aha, I have her where I want her. It right. felt your fear and it said, oh shit, Kimberly is unsafe. The IC was protecting her for a while because all she was doing was thinking about the IC and not her big feelings. But then she turned toward her big feelings, got rid of the IC. I'm just checking. I just love her so much that I'm just checking if she's still safe. So I'm going to give a little dry eye and see what happens. Now, if you had had the presence of mind, which I promise you, you're on your way to feel that dry eye and go, ah, ha, ha, you know, I hear you, love. I don't need this protection. I'm good. And maybe journal like, you know, hardcore about whatever was coming up for you, but also like letting it go completely, giving it no fear and meaning. It would have been gone. I promise you. It would have been gone in a couple of days. But that's fine because it didn't, because you needed to get to exactly where you are today. Does that make sense?
It really does, because how interesting, at the height of the period where I saw that this work is real and my IC went away, right at the peak of that, I wake up with dry eye. Why didn't I just say, this is not real? I immediately went to a medical, started seeing ophthalmologists, procedures. I'm kind of surprised at myself that I didn't use the insight I had just gained, but I, you know, I get it. I get it.
And also, like I said, this is where I sound a little bit, you know, hippy dippy mystical, but forgive me because I am, that it's just perfect. It's exactly where you needed to be. We don't get to choose our lessons. And that's why my prayer for my children and for everyone I love, and I will include you in that, is may your lessons be as painless as possible. Because we don't get to choose them and we still have to learn them, because that's part of being human and unfolding and evolving and getting to be bigger and fuller and more able to give and receive love, which is really the only point, by the way, of this human life, spoiler alert. And so, you know, that's what it took. That's what it took for you. And I would hope that instead of feeling judgmental of yourself or critical or stupid or embarrassed, you could feel deep compassion for yourself, because of course it felt uncomfortable and scary and you've been medicalized for 150 million years. And so you had no choice other than to do what you did. Yeah. But as Maya Angelou says, when we know better, we do better. and you are awakening through your letter to me, through my choosing it, you know, there's no coincidences,
right,
that you get to do this now with love and compassion for yourself, but not urgency and no desperate need to get well. And what is going to happen, I'm just going to project into your future, is you're going to start to be able to cry. Because it's not so simple to just take off the cloak that's been keeping us safe. And you are going to get to learn that now that you're being offered this lesson. Does that land for you?
It does. I think I am assuming that a lot of complicated things have to happen to kind of open up the well of my tears. And my guess is it's not that complicated.
Yes, that's great insight.
I just don't know what door to open. But I'm taking notes here, and I have a little sign on my desk in front of me that says, don't be so hard on yourself. I am just, oh my gosh. That's my thing. And I really need, I love that you use the word compassion. I'm great at showing compassion for other people, not so much myself. So that's what I really need to focus on.
Oh, absolutely. Self-compassion is such a big thing. When I do my retreats, whether they be the online or the in-person ones, I spend half a day of a 4.5-day retreat on self-compassion, because it's so important. And so many of us can report what you just reported, which is, of course, I could show it to my loved ones and my friends so seamlessly. But when it comes to myself, it's blocked by my judgment and by my perfectionism and by my self-loathing or whatever I've collected over the years. So it's so important. It's so important. So I want to go back to the insight you just had, which I think is really important, which is, it's not so complicated. It is so not so complicated. So have you ever heard the scientific, I don't know if it's a study or just a truth, that when they take a certain variety of monkey that has a very high intellect, and they put a big cage in the space for the experiment, and they put something the monkey would like an apple or an orange inside the cage. Mm-hmm. And the monkey, I think always, I mean, I haven't studied this exactly to know percentages, but certainly incredibly significantly amount of time, the monkey will go over, put its hand through the bars of the cage, grab the orange, and be unable to walk away and to be unable to let it go. Have you ever heard of that one?
No, that's wild.
So what's so amazing and so important for us to hear from that experiment is, we both know that the monkey is not in a jail. It can walk away anytime it wants if it can just drop the orange. But it's looking at that orange, and it feels like it needs it so much that it becomes in a jail of its own making, that it will sit there for hours crying, screaming, miserable, and it could just walk away. And these are highly intelligent beings. It could just walk away, but because it can't pull the orange out through the bars of the cage, it is now in jail. And human beings are so like that. And so what you are saying to yourself is, it's so complicated, which is so normal. I mean, I've been where you are 100 times, million times. But really all we need to do is learn how to let go of the thing we thought we needed to survive. And all of a sudden it's like, oh, wait, oh my God, I'm free. I could walk away anytime I wanted. I could cry anytime I wanted. I was just holding on to the thing I thought I needed. So I guess the next question that you and I can kind of tackle together is, what would you be sacrificing that might cause your death? Okay, so we don't mince words around here. You know, the stakes are high. What might you be sacrificing if you allowed yourself to really let it out?
Wow. Well, I've been able to verbalize to myself and with, you know, a dear friend and my daughter, I think, to a certain extent, and my therapist, that my fear around crying and kind of losing it is that if I start crying, I won't stop. It'll take me over the edge into a very dark place that is so scary for me that it is immensely safer to just not even go there. Don't even dip my big toe. And that comes, I should share, and I'm being super vulnerable because why not? You know, I've got this time with you and it's so invaluable. After my breast cancer treatment, I heard from my oncologist that there's two kinds of cancer patients. One set are people that literally fall apart when they hear the diagnosis. They are sobbing, they're frightened, they become, you know, a little helpless, and they are devastated. And at the end of treatment, they are relieved, they regain their composure, their strength, etc. Then there are people like me who get the news, and I don't have time to be upset about it. I don't have time to cry and feel sorry. I move to action. What do I need to do to beat this? I become an expert. I teach other people how to cope with, you know, a cancer diagnosis. I made it out the other end okay, and then I had literally a nervous breakdown, and I ended up it's hard for me to verbalize this, but I had 10 days in a psychiatric hospital from it. So my fear is if I open the floodgates to my anger and sadness and frustration and all of it, I'm going to end back up in that hospital again. And I'm too high functioning for that. I'm too smart for that. It's just really at a very base level scares me to death.
Okay. So I wasn't even being hyperbolic when I said the stakes are high. This is like life or death. Perfect. Beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing that. Before I speak about it personally to you, I want to tell you that it is so important that we have conversations that normalize taking care of our mental health, no matter what stigma it looks like. There is no shame in going into a facility for 10 days to manage your mental health. And thank you for sharing that. And you should feel absolutely no shame or embarrassment around that. Although I do understand it takes a lot of vulnerability and courage to say that, because you're doing such a beautiful service for people who might feel ashamed to take that step for themselves. And I just want to take the opportunity to say there is absolutely nothing shameful about that. That is a beautiful gift of giving your mental health the space and and to honor it, that, you know, whatever you need to get well. So thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Now to speak about you personally. Now, you and I are now going to deconstruct together what happened that led to the mental hospital. You were the second kind of cancer patient, the kind that instead of emoting and falling apart, you decided to hold it all in, be strong for everyone, be the teacher, not the student. You can do this. And it led to the mental hospital.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. So let's reframe the fear that if you start crying, you'll never stop, by using the physician's own words, sort of not against you, but you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
To teach you that the people that fell apart were the ones that didn't need the mental hospital. And so although there is no shame in the mental hospital, what we're learning from this experience is the emoting is the answer to freedom, that we get put somewhere to heal because we choose not to give ourselves that space because we're scared. It's not even – the word choice is a bad word for that, so I apologize. It's not we choose. It's that our fear whispers in our ear loud enough for us to say, it's not going to work out for you if you emote, honey. You got to get your shit together and do what you need to do right now. And that's the best information you had at the time. So that's the one you went with. But now you have more experience and more clarity and more insight under your belt, and you can say – ah, I see. It was never the emoting that was leading me to the breakdown. It was the not emoting.
Yeah.
That left. You know what I'm saying? It's a bit of a flippy.
Right. Yeah, and I need to wrestle to the ground this idea I have that had I fallen apart when I was first diagnosed, that would have been a sign of weakness, because I disdain weakness. I don't know why. I just, I don't admire it in other people. I don't tolerate it in myself. But now when you're saying this to me, I'm considering the word weakness in a very different light. It was actually a weakness to not emote. And it would have been a strength if I had let myself kind of fall apart. And it would be natural. I was diagnosed with a really aggressive kind of breast cancer, and my odds were not great. It would have been absolutely natural and acceptable had I been devastated by
right,
it.
Right, of course, yeah.
Yeah, so good heavens. I must just think that it's my armor. You know, I've got this shield of armor that I've learned over decades to strap on when I bump up against pain.
Yes. And like I said, this whole dance that we're doing is a combination of tremendous self-compassion and self-forgiveness, that the armor seemed like the only way to go. And that process started since before you have memory. So there is no shame in it. You know, we just do our very best with what we're given. But now that you understand that it was not serving you to bring everything in and to not allow yourself to feel and to express what you considered at the time to be weakness, which, like I said, self-compassion, it's the best you had at the time. Mm-hmm. Now you can start seeing the path to setting yourself free. And that's why we're here together, because there's nothing, it's becoming clear to you that there's nothing more important than setting yourself free. That you want to be free of the dry eye, that you want to be free of any chronic symptoms, that you want to be free of not being able to cry. You just want to be free. You're just ready. You're ready to lay it all down. And it doesn't mean that that other stuff that was keeping you alive isn't important. It means that you have found something more important than those old coping mechanisms. And when we do that, that's when we are open to change. Mm.
It would be such a relief. I'm so tired. I'm just like, I'm exhausted from trying to hold it all together.
Yes.
I really am. I look forward to that. I still don't quite know how. I don't know the how, but I'm very, very optimistic and very open to getting there and knowing that it's possible.
Let's take a few minutes on the how, because I mean, this is not without instructions. The how is going to be easy for me to say, and you're going to say, great, thanks. So just warning you. Okay.
Okay.
The first step in how is stop trying.
Oh, all right.
Sorry. Okay. I don't know you more than 43 minutes, but I knew you weren't going to like that.
I'm a good trier, so that's a tough one. Okay, stop trying.
I bet you are, and that's ubiquitous in all us TMSers, so welcome to the club.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're all really good at trying and really bad at surrender. Mm-hmm. So the first step in where you want to go is that the more we try to attain any certain thing, the more that is read by the nervous system as fear. And anything that is read by the nervous system as fear will be translated into the symptoms, because the nervous system is using the symptom of dry eye and all the fixation on it to keep you from that full release that you're looking for. So the key of not trying is simply to lay down your weapon. It's not about any active thing like, I'm not going to care anymore. No, that means you're trying not to care. It's just saying, I give up. In the most tender, lovely way, it's saying, I have tried. It's that energy I just felt in your voice, the beautiful energy when you said, Nicole, I'm so tired.
Yeah.
Like, that's the energy I'm looking for. Just, I can't. I'm Kimberly. I'm 65. I've tried it all. I've been through so much. My old ways of coping are no longer working for me. They're not leading to my freedom and peace. So you know what? I don't know the answer. But I know that the old things I was doing are not the answer. Mm-hmm. So I just give up. I don't know what that means. And the beauty of the kind of surrender I'm talking about is you still get to be however type A you want in terms of your behavior, meaning you can still get up every day and be like, okay, I'm going to do my journal speak and I'm going to meditate and I'm going to get some exercise and I'm going to, you know, watch the sad movie. You can do all the same things. It's the energy with which you do them, which is you replace your fear with curiosity. So every time you're like, oh, I don't know, I want to do this, but is it going to work for me? Instead of that energy, which is an energy of fear, you replace it with, I wonder what this is going to do today. No idea. Let's see. And if you can just practice this, and you are going to need, just like any muscle you want to build, it requires practice. So you're trying to build this muscle of surrender that will lead to the muscle of release, and you're new at it. And it's a humbling experience at each of our ages that we grow into. You know, you're 35, you're 40, you're 45, you're 50, 55. We're always going to encounter new things. And it's humbling to continue having to be a newcomer, to be like, shit, I thought I learned this already. I got to do this now different. I got to do this again. And allowing that voice to have a voice in your journal speak, that we don't shut it down. We say, I so hear you. Everything you meet with compassion, I hear you, that voice of frustration. Speak, honey, you speak. And then once she speaks, say, I hear all your anger, but we're going to do this now. Okay. Sorry. That is how you continue meeting life, and it gets easier and easier and easier, and you're not trying, and you're surrendering, but you're still acting. And here's what happens one day, Kimberly, the same way that one day you woke up and you're like, wait a second, my eyes see, it doesn't feel quite the same. Right. And then you went through half a day and you're like, wait a second. I haven't felt the pain in 3 hours. Like, you remember when that was happening?
Oh my God. I it was like it was yesterday. Yep.
And I want our listeners out there to know, I don't know anything about Kimberly, but I'm saying this to her and I know it happens because it's the same way it happens for everyone.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, I have no idea that was an experience she had, but I know because that's the way it goes. So remember when that was happening and you were like, damn, okay, what's going to happen is you are going to be going about your business, innocently walking through life, and you're going to see a bunny. And instead of bursting into tears like your friend, you're going to just feel this little tightness in the throat. You're going to feel a little bit of that, like a little watery behind your eyes, and you're going to go, oh my God, I almost got emotional about that bunny. And then it's going to shut down because that's what, you know, it's going to tease. It's going to test. It's going to say, is it safe? Are we going to fall apart? Are we going to end up in the mental hospital if I cry about the bunny? And you're going to have to continue to say, noticing the way we do in meditation, noticing and letting go, breathing. And then one day you're going to find yourself in the car and a song is going to come on and you are just going to freaking cry. Oh. And you are just going to cry, honey. And it's going to be really beautiful. And there's nothing about it that's going to feel scary because you will have already released the need for it to be anything. Not scary, not great, not, it'll just be what you feel. And just, you know, be with it as long as it may be 1 minute, might be 5 minutes, might be 10 seconds. It doesn't matter. And just say, wow, that was interesting. There's nowhere to arrive. And I hate to say this to you because it's terrible news, but there's no way to get an A at life. I'm sorry.
I know
you want one because we all do, especially us personalities that get this kind of, you know, response to our fear. We want it to be done. We want there to be a bow and a beautifully wrapped present and an A and a check plus, and you've done well and now you can relax. And it's just not the way it goes.
Yeah. Yeah. I appreciate that. It all makes sense. I notice, Nicole, as I'm listening, I'm taking notes. What I'm doing differently this time than I did with my IC, because I'm frustrated that I got something else that's so debilitating right on the heels of, you know, of being out of pain from IC. I'm really focused on anger. So when my dry eye is at its worst, I go up in my head and I imagine an angry father who has told his kids a million times to turn the lights off upstairs before they come downstairs. And he storms upstairs. So now I'm storming up into my brain and he's flipping off the light switches, turning them off. And I'm trying to turn off the pain signals and I'm getting angrier and angrier and I'm flipping them really hard. And that imagery kind of worked for me a little bit with my IC, and it's not working for me with this dry eye. And I'm sitting in anger all the time. I'm not moving to this surrender which is just more passive.
So I totally understand that. And once again, I will say that this is why this is perfect for you, because although that more sort of barreling towards something rather than slowing down and receiving it, although that energy worked for you at the beginning, that's because you're on a journey, and that was necessary for you to understand that what we're really looking for is that we are not here to master our lives. We're here to settle in and receive all the beauty that's coming to us. And this is a journey, and we're all on it, and I'm on it too. And so what I would like you to do is understand that when I hear that analogy, what I know about you, and I don't even need to know you to know this about you, is that you are not the angry father. You are the small, scared little girl in the corner who didn't mean to leave the lights on.
Mm. Wow.
You are there. And you are shaking because his anger is so scary and you really didn't mean it. And you know he had told you before, but you forgot, and it really wasn't intentional. And you feel so sad and you feel so scared. And I want you to just know that that's the you in that scenario. And maybe that'll help you know that that's not going to be what gets rid of this one.
I really appreciate that. That is an image that I will use when I'm doing, you know, the inner child work that you speak of, and asking her to tell me how she's feeling. I think this is a big one. That's great. Thank you.
Oh, I got to tell you, Kimberly, this conversation was so great. This is just exactly what this work is about. I am so grateful for you for being on here and being so vulnerable and being so authentic and so real and allowing me to ask the kind of questions that come up and answering them. And it's a beautiful service that you're doing for yourself and for everyone listening. Thank you so much.
Oh, well, I felt moved to write to you. And when you responded to me, I was like a giddy child, because you're like a celebrity to me and to so many people. But just in one short hour, with having had no other conversation with you other than an email, to have this kind of takeaway is just my heart is full. I can't even, I mean, I'm a tiny bit teary just because I'm just so appreciative of, it's just a different frame. I have a different frame of mind right now than I did before we talked. I'm eternally grateful, really.
Wow. Well, use that. Allow that emotion. Just sit with it. You know, you don't need it to be any bigger or smaller than it is. When we get off the phone, just use that, because this is the beautiful invitation. Your system is already saying, "Ah, I see where we're going. Mm-hmm. I see we're safe." Mm-hmm. Okay. And then we'll just get on our way.
Love
and
it.
It's just another day, you know, it's just another day.
Love it. I can do that. I will. I will.
Well, I know you can. I know you can. Well, Kimberly, thank you again for coming on Real Time Heal. It has been such a pleasure to talk to you.
Absolutely, Nicole. You bet. Appreciate it.
All right, my friends. Well, this has been Real Time Heal with me, Nicole Sachs. And if you are enjoying the podcast, it is a great favor to me and to Kimberly, I'll just throw you in there, to go over to iTunes and rate and review it, because that really helps other people find the podcast, and we would appreciate that. And until next week, this has been The Cure for Chronic Pain. We'll see you then. Bye-bye.